So this new children's home, Il Maria, in the old children's home, when I rang the place, they would normally answer the phone, and sometimes I would get the chance to talk to William. Now, in this new children's home, they almost never answer my phone calls, and when they do, they normally hang up on me. Right?
Yeah.
And so this is not a good sign. And so I have only been able to speak to William. William phoned me sometime this year because he wanted a toy, and it was a computer game, and I got it for him, and it was quite difficult. But I was concerned that he wouldn't get it, so I contacted a church in this place, Surnine, and or Sainine, I don't know how you, that A with the dots on top.
Yep.
Anyway, they approached the children's home. And I asked them, could you please contact William and tell him that I love him and deliver his mail? And they approached the children's home, and the children's home said no. And so the only friends I have in Finland are in southern Finland, and they can't drive hundreds of miles to deliver a mail package. So I risked it. I risked it, and I mailed it to him, and he got it, and he was very happy with that. So.
Your relationship is still, he knows about you, hasn't forgotten about you, everything is okay there, right, William?
Well, sadly, when I was in Finland in 2009, both of my children hopped in the car with me the day I was leaving, and they wanted to come back to Australia with me. And William had been begging to come back to Australia for years. And that reminds me, in 2009, I taught William that these, because I was allowed to talk to him in his bedroom privately, and I warned him that these drugs were bad, and he was throwing them down the toilet. And he said, I feel better. And he said that Anu Kusi, this psychiatrist, she's been more responsible for the drugging of William than anybody. And William said to me, Anu Kusi is a shithead. Right?
Yeah.
So in
It's the
2009, he was
judgment of the
with.
child, the patient here, folks. So keep that in mind. Yeah. Okay, go
Yeah,
ahead,
yeah.
William. Yeah.
So he was completely on my side. Both of my children were completely on my side. As a matter of fact, another amusing thing happened in 2009. Mikhail was fighting with another child, and he was put in his bedroom as a punishment. And so he had scratches on his face. And anyway, I thought, well, I'm going to teach this little tiger how to throw a punch. So I did. And then the next week, I think it was, the manager of the children's home, Seppo Kuninen, he walked up to him and punched him fair in the
Jeez.
stomach. And,
Well, that's not going to
you know,
help
he.
his case, though, right? He needs to, he needs to, to give the veneer of being, calm or appreciative of the situation, despite, feeling otherwise, I guess, and try to, I, you know, seriously, I don't know what would help in this case. Well, I mean, you kind of alluded to it earlier, Warren, but what would unlock the situation? What would be the key to making to have the children come back into your care? What would that be? Go over that again for us.
I believe that if most of the Finnish people could hear this interview, and if even a small fraction of them were to believe it to be true, I would hope that there would be a large number of Finnish people that would howl with protest at the Finnish government, and something would be done. And well, at least perhaps a small number of very determined people would step forward and push the cause. And I think that if even 10% of the Finnish people were to hear and believe this story, I don't think the Finnish government could stand the international embarrassment, you know. And I think that William would come back to me. And curiously, the justification for holding William prisoner and continuing to drug him is behavior problems. And by their own admission, those behavior problems continue to get worse. Then by the logic that William had behavior problems that his mother Kaisu couldn't cope with, then by that same logic, if those behavior problems became worse in the care of the psychiatrists, then the logic dictates he should go into the care of a family member, or back to his father, but back to his father, ideally, second choice family member, third choice foster parent.
Who would that family member be, though, if you could choose,
Well, it would be Kaisu's sister and her man.
Yeah.
And
are you still in contact with them? Is that okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Everything okay there between you guys? And so.
Yeah. I visited them last time I was in Finland, and I've never pressured them to help in any way. I don't think Kaisu would listen to them, and I don't really have any contact with any of the other family members. I mean, I could find them on Facebook, but I think that would perhaps be impolite. But
well, considering the scenario you're in here, you're desperate for help for anybody who could, you know, help you out and help William out at the end of it, right?
Well, of course, you know, I'd welcome their help, but I don't know if that's perhaps the right move on the chessboard.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. No, I see what you mean exactly. At this stage, it's a tactical game, and you need to do everything.
Yeah.
You know, to get your children back. So, what's going on next here, though? Where is your strategy then? Because this is what it is. It's a strategy to get your children back. What are you looking at doing next here?
Well, I'm hoping that this great opportunity to talk to you will cause more people to look at my book, and then it's just a matter of, you know, if you've got cockroaches in your kitchen and you put a spotlight on them, they scatter.
Yeah.
And I think the media could put the spotlight on the psychiatrists, and you know, so yeah, that's the purpose of that. But I would like, if I may, to read some bits and pieces from some of these statements that I have from these people. Would that be okay?
Yeah, sure. I always wanted to mention before we do that, though, as well.
Yeah.
Media subsidies, state subsidies, basically, for the media is very, very common in the Nordic countries. And I believe Finland is incorporated into that particular model, if you will, as well. I'm trying to find some information about that as we speak here. But that's another problem.
Correct.
That's a huge problem, Warren, in terms of why they would pick this story up. Yeah, go ahead.
That's perfectly correct. I met a man called Marty Virtanen, who had his own current affairs show. I met him in Finland, I think it was in 2007, and he told me that he liked the story, but he was afraid of getting sued by the medical industry.
Yeah.
I'll read the story from this. There was a man, I found a man in, you might find this of interest, I found a man in 2011. His name was Baron Christopher Bernadotte von Aschberg, and he claimed to be a member of a Swedish royal family.
Yeah, Bernadotte. Yeah, I know that name. Yeah.
Okay. And he sent me, we were communicating via email, and this was his first email. Dear Warren, I have no words at this moment after looking and listening to your heartbroken story. It is such a waste and shame that you cannot get help from the Finnish authorities, that your solicitors do not stand firm to get your case heard in a court of justice for human rights. With the information regarding the medication, you have a strong case, and also your case have valuable information on how instructions are run. These can be a assist to the courts of human rights. Please forward me with more detail regarding your case and the human rights group in Finland. I wish to help you and your children. I am the founder of the Irish Foundation because he's living in Ireland. I'm the founder of the Irish Foundation for Tortured Survivors and the recipient of the 2001 St. Angela's International Peace and Justice Award and the 2003 Lord Mayor of Dublin Award. I am fully qualified medical consultant and also qualified in criminal and human rights law. Please send me what you can, as it will be treated as confidential and private. I will try to help you. And this sounded wonderful, but nothing ever came of it. The communication just faded away.
Hmm.
And I don't know if he really was who he claimed to be,
right.
Or if he simply found something more important to do, or if he became, or if he was intimidated in some way. But anyway, that came to nothing, which was very sad. But
well, hopefully, you can hear from him again if he indeed has any, you know, influence in terms of helping you out there. But yeah.
All right. And there's a statement here from 2004 from a nosy but kind-hearted neighbour in Australia, and this says it better than I can say it, I think. And so it's one page. And would it be okay to read that?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. To whom it may concern, my name is Jennifer Ann Hendra, and I reside at the above address. I have lived at that address for the past 20 years. I am 64 years of age, a mother and a grandmother. I have no criminal record. My property borders Max and Maura McLaughlin's property on one corner. Up until 2002, I have had an unimpeded view into their back garden. I now have a small garden shed in the corner, but I can still see into their garden. During the latter part of 1999, 2000, and until October 2001, I was concerned for the welfare of William McLaughlin, the infant son of Warren and Kaisley McLaughlin. In my opinion, the mother of the infant, William, was guilty of physical, verbal, and mental abuse against her son. I was concerned enough to report the matter to the Child Welfare Authority, but refrained from doing so until I had spoken with the child's grandmother, Maura McLaughlin, and told her of my fears. So Kaisley McLaughlin, I'm just skipping forward here. Kaisley McLaughlin often slapped the young William. She continually screamed abuse at him in a very loud voice. She told him how naughty he was, how stupid he was, what an awful child he was. I have also seen her pinch the little one on both his arms and his legs. One of her favorite punishments was to take away his toys and not allow him to play in his paddling pool. She would also not allow him to pet the dog, of which he was very fond. William was a normal baby and toddler. He did not cry continually, and whenever I saw him, he was not a difficult child. I think that's enough of that. Amazing statement here from a psychiatrist in 2004 by the name of Maya Alvinen. In our view, the problems, this is just one sentence. In our view, the problems that William and the family have are so serious that William needs long-term therapy and the family intensive support. The best way of achieving this would be hospitalization. The authority exerted by and the means available to outpatient care to impose the restrictions required for the father are insufficient.
Clarify that last part for us again. What does that mean? What does that mean to you, Warren?
It's a translation. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It says the authority exerted by and the means available to outpatient care to impose the restrictions required for the father are insufficient. But what that means to me is that they don't want me to know what they're doing to him.
And they want to restrict you from having any influence in this case as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Do the state always, and this is another issue, of course, but do the state always side with the mother as well? I mean, in this case, okay, then I can understand. It's in Finland. You're from Australia. Uh-huh. There's question mark, you know, here. Who should they trust? Who could they talk to legally? Blah, 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 everything. But we've heard so many cases from so many fathers that basically are hung out to dry, and they're left not being able to see their children because the state and the lawyer and the system and everything sides with the mother, right?
I think the basic point is that the state is running a divide and conquer tactic. They want to bust up families because, again, of the profit motive that's involved, for one reason at least.
Yeah.
At least these drug companies and these medical people and these so-called children's charities, they want to bust up families to increase their income. And women tend to be more inclined to seek help from the state than men. And so, and on top of that, the woman gives birth, the woman breastfeeds, and so there's a natural bond there. It's hard to argue in a court of law that the child should be with the mother, the father, as opposed to the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so normally, if the mother isn't an ogre, you know, the child goes to the mother. And so this sort of sets a legal precedent.
Yeah.
And that the women are being conditioned into, you know, seeking help from the state, like, you know, going for immunizations and, you know, going to, you know, social workers, et cetera. But men tend to be, want to be self-sufficient. And so I think that if you're going to bust up a family, you've got to target the man because that's easier.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what's going on here.
Yeah, I believe you're right. I think because then ultimately as well, I think that many people on the level of what we're talking about now might not have this perception in mind or even this attitude in mind. But I think through the way that the government has been run in the last, 30, 40 years, maybe even more, this strategy has been incorporated into the model itself because it makes people more dependent on the state and the government. And that's ultimately where they see the key is lying. Because if people were capable and independent of running their lives, you know, outside of the government, then the need for them would slowly diminish. But now we're seeing a reverse and opposite of that. We're seeing more and more, you know, there's more and more incentive for the government to be in place just because of these situations, because of families are shattered, you know, kids need to be schooled by the state, etc. There's a number of, you know, variables here that basically that the government and the state relies on to perpetuate itself and be in existence. And it's just getting worse and worse on that end, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the drivers for this, one of the big drivers, is you've got literally got multinational drug companies that have a bigger annual income than the Finnish government. You know.
Yeah.
And they would probably, it would be great to get the exact bones of this. You know, so much more could be put into my book, but I would like to know, you know, what donations does. Do these drug companies donate hospital wings? Do they pay these Finnish psychiatrists to promote their drugs? Do they give them consultancy positions and pay them large sums of money and so on?
Yeah.
And so I think that's what's going on. But I think that's a big driver in it. You've simply got multinational corporations, in some cases that have been around for centuries, that are literally running rings around politicians.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. And they're using the system to perpetuate, you know, their own company and their financial interests. Yeah.
They're using the government to shut down their competition and expand their monopoly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah. But anyway, so...
And I'll just interject this as well. Obviously, they don't have... There might be another motive behind this as well, or for example, why the choice of drugs, etc. I mean, I can go far and wide in my conspiracy theories in terms of what they want to do, but ultimately, it's not health that they have in mind. It's to keep people again dependent on a drug, to keep them coming back for getting that pill more and more, so that this becomes something part of everyday life for you know every human on the planet. This would give them, the drug companies, more money than they ever could dream of if they could become part of everyone's reality and have to pop pills every time, you know, every day, basically.
Well, yeah. I mean, like an interesting point on that is that if you have an expanding welfare class, they will vote the working class, they will vote to tax the working class out of existence.
Yep.
And this is the danger of democracy. Two wolves and a sheep deciding what's for dinner.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, so I think perhaps the ideal form of government would be no government at all.
That's right. That's right.
But that would be a situation where you didn't need a lock on your door. Nobody ever killed anybody. Nobody ever stole anything off anybody. Nobody ever lied to anybody, you know.
Well, the fact is that these things occur anyway with these securities and things in place. People still break that law, even if the law is there. So that's obviously not what it's about. It's about a mental state of human beings and our own welfare and our own capability of taking care of ourselves. So there's so many things lacking here, you know.
Yeah, well, I think the state basically, at certainly partly driven by these monopolistic, international organizations want to make everybody totally dependent on the state, and they want a monopoly on production and distribution.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and I think, this is one of the drivers. But the state wants to expand their power base and thereby expand their income, and politicians also they do a thing called insider trading. That's another one of their big games. You know, they get information before other people get it and they act on it and they make millions of dollars out of it.
Sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to interject here as well then, Warren, before we carry on here. From a story in 2011, World Association of Newspapers and News Publishers, this story came out that detailed a little bit about media state subsidies. And it says the following regarding Finland. Finland gave the most public money per capita to support the media, around 46 pounds, actually, British pounds a year per head via indirect subsidies such as tax and VAT exemptions. It also goes on to say, well, and also then mind you that despite this, after this, the Finnish people also have to go on. They pay for the newspaper. You have TV license things on top of this. And in 2013, Finland actually replaced the television license with a direct unconditional income tax called Yle Vero, which is 50 to 140 euros, I guess, per household, I guess, depending on income or per person. I don't know. The proceeds are used for funding the public broadcaster Yle's radio. So, I mean, that's a scenario you're looking at as well on top of this, that you have, you know, a media that are getting the main thrust of their funding from the government itself. Why would they turn around and bite that hand that feeds them, you know?
Yeah, well, that's interesting, yeah. But I that reminds me that statement I was trying to find for you. There was a man, I think his name was Ari Korvola, who was also working for Yle. And I remember he said, "I am so sorry what you suffered, and this should be a civilized country." So, you know, but again, he would do nothing. But I would like to read from this Marianne Tillman, who was the manager of this children's home that William was staying in 2007. Would that, just briefly, would that be okay?
Sure, no worries. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So it says, "Mr. Warren McLaughlin, father of William, during our phone conversation on April 19, 2007, you asked me to reply in writing to your request that the people mentioned below are entitled to meet with your son, William McLaughlin. A human rights organization of your choice, a lawyer of your choice, a doctor of your choice, a private detective of your choice, and a representative of a religious organization of your choice." And it says here, she says, "It is not in the best interests of William to meet with people totally unknown to him." Well, I could counter that by saying, well, it's not in the best interests of William to meet you because you're totally unknown
well,
to him.
Exactly.
And I don't trust you.
Well, exactly. And who are these foster parents and everything? I mean, if they're people unknown, then you are the best person to meet, to care for him. What the hell is that? Ridiculous.
Yeah, and wouldn't I be the best person to judge who would be the best people to meet with my son?
Well, of course, because you're the father. Yeah.
And if I may read briefly from this website called drugs.com on the subject of Zyprexa, which is one of the drugs they gave William. And remember, they've been giving him up to at least five drugs at a time, maybe more now, I just don't know. But the side effects go like this: severe allergic reactions, rash, hives, itching, difficulty breathing, tightness in the chest, swelling of the mouth, face, lips or tongue, unusual hoarseness, abnormal thoughts, chest pain, confusion, decreased urination, fainting, fast, slow or irregular heartbeat, fever, chills, or persistent sore throat, increased saliva production or drooling, increased sweating, memory loss, menstrual changes, muscle pain, weakness, stiffness, worsening mental or mood changes, e.g. depressions, hallucination, one-sided weakness, seizures, severe or prolonged dizziness or headache, a shortness of breath, suicidal thoughts or actions, swelling of the hands, legs or feet, symptoms of high blood sugar, increased thirst, hunger or urination, unusual weakness, symptoms of high prolactin levels, e.g. enlarged breast size, decreased sexual ability, missed menstrual period, nipple discharge, tremor, trouble concentrating, speaking or swallowing, trouble sitting still, trouble walking or standing, uncontrolled muscle movements, e.g. arm, leg or leg movements, twitching of the face or tongue, jerking or twisting, unusual bruising, vision changes, yellowing of the skin or eyes. This is not a complete list of all side effects that may occur.
Well, it's not so bad then. Yeah, that's all right.
And that's only one of the drugs they've been giving him. And bear in mind, five.
How this happened, Warren? I mean, how this all any of this happened, it's just, it's a nightmare how this got approved and how people are okay with this, considering what they legally have to put on their freaking, you know, pills that they're trying to give to people. It's unbelievable.
You know what I believe? I believe that most people, they're hoping that if they do what the government tells them to, they'll be left alone. And they're afraid of the government, and they don't really want to know what they suspect, that perhaps some things are not as they should be, but they really don't, most people apparently to me, don't really want to know what bad things the government are up to, because most people being good people, if they knew that the government was doing some really bad things, they would have to rebel against the government in some way. And most people are very comfortable with their life exactly the way it is, no matter how bad and unbearable it may seem
to them.
That's
right. Yeah, you're right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know? Their fear of change, it terrifies them.
And responsibility, having to do something about something, upsetting the order, you know, rocking the apple cart. Yeah, people don't want to do it. They want to live a peaceful life, you know, quiet with their families and just chill out. You know, they don't want this, but...
Yeah, yeah.
The more we stay away from it and try to huddle, you know, in fear of just, you know, and scouring away and trying to avoid it, the bigger this beast is going to grow, and eventually there won't be anywhere that you can hide and run from anymore.
But I believe that obeying the government and hoping that they'll leave you alone or protect you is similar to lying down in front of a pack of wolves and saying, well, perhaps if I behave in a non-threatening manner, they'll leave me alone.
Mm. yeah. Unfortunately, that seems to be where it's come to, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, so there's a statement.
Let me just mention this as well. Sorry to interrupt, Warren, again, but
yeah.
And it's also really in a situation like this, which is, it's outside of the box. It's outside of the comfort zone. Most people never get to experience this situation that you've been in. But it's when, but it's when you kind of end up between between you fall through the cracks basically, and something unexpected happens. You don't really understand how's this going to go now, and that's when you're exposed to and experience the ferocious behavior of a bureaucracy like this, who's completely emotionally stunted. They don't have anything in consideration. There's not the one person that you can talk to. It's just a wall of papers that are coming at you. While you, Warren, on this case, are sitting on the other end receiving this, you have an emotional tie to your children. You want to spend time with them. You want to be with them. And all you get in response is like nonsensical papers, basically. And you can't get a straight answer from anybody. There's tremendous frustration involved in this.
Yeah, well, that reminds me of one more thing I wanted to say about Auntie and Paola. They have a special telephone just for me. And they only turn it on Wednesday nights between 7:30 and 8:30 p.m. Finnish time. And if I ask them for their normal phone number, they hang up on me.
Yeah, they're not allowed to do it. What was the length of that time again, you said? How much did you get?
One hour.
On Wednesdays?
Wednesday night between 7:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m., I can phone Mikhail.
And what time is that for you, by the way?
Summertime it's 2 a.m. and wintertime it's 3 a.m.
Wow. Well, that's considerate also, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. But
work and, you know, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. But, so anyway,
so I'd you like can, so you can, sorry again to interrupt, but so you can talk to them once every week for an hour, or is it their choice to pick it up if you call them, or how does that work?
Well, Mikhail is happy to talk to me. That reminds me, in 2011, when I was visiting William at this Palastica Lapset headquarters, I wanted to speak to him privately and tell him something, and I pulled him to one side, and William said to me, bearing in mind, in 2009, we were in his bedroom sharing secrets, I was sneaking him vitamins. He was throwing the psych drugs down the toilet. You know, they were begging to come back to Australia with me. It was truly heartbreaking, because I knew by the time I got back again, the chances of William being physically damaged or dead would increase. And anyway, so 2011, I pulled William to one side and said, "Hey, William, I want to tell you something." And he said, "I'm not allowed to stand close to you or talk to you privately." And this social worker, Tommy, he came over and he said, "That's right. William is not allowed to speak to you unless I can hear what you are saying." Right. Anyway, I was not impressed with this. And I walked over to Tommy and I stood about an inch away from his face and I looked him right in the eye. And he said, "Move." And I didn't move. And he pushed me and I didn't move. And then he canceled the meeting.
Yeah.
So anyway, I restrained myself. You could imagine what I would have liked to have done to him.
It's like, how do these people not expect you to be? It's, you know what? I think it's almost like what they're trying to do is like they're trying to provoke you because they want to have that violence come out of you so that they for good can take away your children, you know. And so that's the worst thing you could do, obviously, in this case.
That's absolutely what they're about. I don't think all these people are evil. I think. I'm certain that it does attract pedophiles and sadists to the industry, but in the case, you know, I think that some of them do mean well, but I think by doing what they do, they incriminate themselves increasingly, and they become more part of the game. They have to cover up, you know, for the crimes of their fellows and themselves. They become incriminated.
And all your reactions are normal, you know. To have this frustration locked up inside of you, and having them the power to do what they've done. I mean, exactly. It's amazing you haven't gone postal on these, you know, assholes. Sorry, but I mean, it's unbelievable that they can do.
You know why I haven't? Well, one of the reasons I haven't is because they want me to.
Well, exactly. I know.
Right?
Yeah.
That would be the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
Look, this bloke, we had to lock this bloke up because he's crazy.
Yeah.
Look, his children are crazy. His wife's crazy. Obviously, you know, it runs in the family. Case closed. You know, he will never see the light of day again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I'd like to read briefly, if I could, from this psychiatrist, Jill Backstrom. "During spring 2011, William has repeatedly tried to harm himself. Medication, Serenel in the mornings, Abilify in the mornings, Olanzapine in the mornings, taken when needed, Atarax, Lorazepam."
Lorazepam. That just knocks you out. These drugs are what takes. This is what takes the humanity out of the children as well, by the way. And that's why now they're calm. Everything is fine now. I mean, don't they understand? Don't they have a basic? I mean, they're into psychiatry, of course, which is a different field from psychology, which is psychiatry is more modern with the medication and the chemicals and everything. But wouldn't they understand that a child who has been ripped from his parents in this way has an expression of sadness and anger and you know, his world has been shattered? Don't they understand this basic stuff?
Like I say, I believe they become increasingly incriminated, and they end up with mortgages and car payments and pensions and holidays. And these are the good ones, right? The ones that don't like to hurt children.
Yeah.
And then they have committed by the simple act of obeying orders. If there was a Nuremberg style trial, and if it was more effective than Nuremberg. And I don't know if you're familiar, but during Nuremberg, the American psychiatric industry spared no expense to protect the German psychiatrists, which were the basic cause of the death camps.
Oh, sure. They wanted the information extracted out of those that international experiment called the Second World War that was done. Everything that was done on the medical basis there, absolutely. Of course, there was invested interest by the internationalists to get that information out so they could use that for the population after, you know, on the population after the war.
Yeah, but also if the German psychiatrists had have hung, then the spotlight would have turned on the American psychiatrists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so anyway, there's one like I said, they've never given me any scientific proof that William has any illness of any kind. And this is the closest admission that I've ever got from them, that he actually doesn't have anything wrong with him at all. And it says, William is physically a basically healthy boy. So this is from this psychiatrist, Jill Backstrom. So basically, they've admitted right there, in layman's terms, that they have no scientific proof that William has any illness of any kind.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, the first statement I got from these social workers began in 2002, and I just highlighted a couple of points out of these five pages. May I read those?
Sure, yes.
Okay. It says, on 2003, on 14th February, the Social Services Center received a child welfare notification concerning William. According to the anonymous informant, the mother treated William roughly and even struck him. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, 2004, the daycare center had found that the only way to restrain William was to hold him physically, which could continue for up to 2 hours. Mm. Now, that reminds me of another point. And in one of these other documents I've got floating around in my fat filing cabinet, William Kaisu dumped William onto the psychiatrist in 2003 in fits and spurts, and at one stage she came back. It's right here. It's in this paper here. That's right. Where are we? What year is this now? 2004. It says here, when the mother and the boys were in the shelter, the staff noticed that the mother had begun shouting at William at the slightest cause. And that's not what I wanted. It must be on the next page. Here we go. 2005. Damn, why can't I find that? But anyway, 2005, on Wednesday, William began an examination period on Klondike Children's Psychiatric Ward. Anyway, in one of these statements, they say that Kaisu came to bring him home from a weekend for a weekend visit.
Mm-hmm.
And William physically fought her to prevent her from taking him home.
Okay. Hmm. Well, there's a reason for that, I guess.
Yeah, because in this stage, 2005, they hadn't drugged him in this place.
Yeah.
And I guess they hadn't. The thing I'm hoping for is that Finland seems to be more civilized than America. And I know that, for example, children are suffocated to death in psychiatric hospital. Children have been suffocated to death in psychiatric hospitals in America by pinning them to the ground. And I just get the feeling that Finland is more of a velvet-gloved welfare state.
Well, there we go.
Yeah, they want to kill the child professionally and slowly with velvet gloves.
With a smile on the child's face. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I'm hoping that this means that he hasn't been raped. I'm certain that he's been beaten. Because if they're going to beat him in a kindergarten, what are they going to do in there when he bites them or punches them? But hopefully the children haven't been raped. I just get the feeling that they would be in much greater danger in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they've got this sort of out-of-control, private, capitalistic psychiatric industry.
Yeah, but in some cases, that's better though, because they do have a difference. There is, I mean, I have to say, I have to defend that model because, I mean, again, being from Scandinavia and just seeing the monopoly that the government has on anything when it comes to healthcare and offering services in the case of a private, it doesn't mean that everything is, you know, rainbows and, you know, perfect there either. It's not that, but the idea there at least is that you can make the judgment for yourself. If you're not comfortable with it being in someone's hand, you can change it. There are different private practices that you can you know, talk with and get a different feel for it. And I just think that would be so much better if they then in that case truly had money as an interest. Then that interest would be to take good care of them. See, in a government scenario, you don't have that question. You don't have that variable there. If you see what I'm getting at, Warren, which means that if, and this is what it's about, that sure, you might have a system that's really beneficial and it's all good and you have benevolent people in there and everything's wonderful. But if you get the wrong people in place in those positions, then they have all the power in the world, and you have nothing to say about it. So it's all about that very, very dangerous variable, which is, all right, do we trust our entire system to hang on the balance on a few people, and we have to trust that they are good people and can do this right? Or do we divide up the power among many different entities, in this case then private, where, okay, you can run into some rotten eggs here and there, but at least then you have the power and the option to choose something else. Do you see what I mean?
I think that capitalism is a better system, no doubt. However, you've got this sort of, at the moment, I'm guessing that the average child is safer in a Finnish government home than an American government home, or an American psychiatric private hospital.
How about an Australian one?
I don't know too much about it, but we did have the curious case in the 70s of a psychiatrist that killed, I think it was about 40 people in CIA mind control experiments.
In Australia?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. And what happened was a human rights group fought for decades, and they got this thing on in the courts. And the day before the man was due to appear in the courts, the head psychiatrist, he committed suicide.
Hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, so I think that ultimately, yes, when the state gets absolute power, you may see a rerun of something similar to Nazi Germany. But in America, you've sort of got a twisted form of monopoly capitalism.
Sure. Where, well, exactly. That's the problem.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Where I know there was, so it's kind of like ultimately the Finnish state is more communistic and more state run, so it's perhaps going to end up at that very dark place sooner than America.
Well, I think so, and what's dangerous there as well, Warren, and I've talked about this in the context of Sweden, but it's that when you have this, you know, velvet glove on top of that, you know, iron fist, if you will, of that tyranny, then people are more inclined not to believe that these things are going on. In that way, it's more dangerous. When it's more open and overt, people know what they're facing. They know that it is an enemy, if you will. But in this case, people laugh at you if they say that, you know, if you try to come to them and say that there's human rights abuses in Sweden, or, you know, that there's violence from the government, or you know, any of these things. And, you know, people who don't know anything about the country but have read about it in a wonderful publication, you know, like The Economist or something, they just laugh in your face and think you're crazy, you know?
Yeah. Well, I know there was an example of a American psychiatric hospital, a private one, that was looking through the computer for people with high class medical insurance, and was sending goons out and kidnapping them, and locking them up and drugging them until their insurance ran out, and kicking them out on the street.
Yeah, I mean, and just to follow up on that as well, I don't know how many stories I've heard about when it comes to elderly care in Sweden, which is, you know, a lot of it is socialized as well, but these intense abuses of the elderly in these wards, you know, and they're being violently beaten, and people have been trying to rob them and stuff like that. It's like, it's just a sickness in the human spirit of people who are doing this kind of stuff to the young and to the old, and those who don't have the ability to defend themselves. It's parasitical assholes, and they come in every society, it seems like, unfortunately.
I think what happens, Henrik, in government is that if you have, for example, a thing called democracy, what you have, I believe, you have a minority of people, let's take the magic figure of 1%, that like to hurt other people.
Yeah.
Okay? And so then you have a system called democracy where you vote for a certain person every 4 years, and then you go back to your fishing boat and your esky full of your box of beer, and you know, everything, life, and back to work, and life goes back to normal. And but in that situation, I would argue that what you have is government by the minority. If you're electing a minority to govern your country and tell you what to do, then you have government by the minority. And my argument is that if you have government by the minority, you will have government for the minority.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and what I've noticed is with politicians is the dumb ones, they're just there for the benefits, like the pension funds, the big paycheck, all the side benefits. the first class hotels and things like this. But the smart ones, like we've got a prime minister now called Kevin Rudd, and his wife, I don't know too much about it because I work a lot, and these trips to Finland, on my average wage, I work hard. I'm good at saving my money, and most of my spare cash has been burnt on these trips to Finland.
Yeah,
sadly, I couldn't afford this human rights lawyer. But Kevin Rudd's wife. Point being is I'm so busy working and I've written most of this book on my iPhone, as a matter of fact, in stolen moments at work. I don't have time to worry. I certainly don't have any interest to worry about the mass media because I think that I'm less likely to get the truth from there. I'm more likely to get the truth from the alternative media. So I like to listen to radio programs on my iPhone, like, for example, yours.
Cool.
Point being, I have no time or interest for the corporate. I call them the corporate media, and and the Kevin Rudd's wife. I'm just guessing. I don't pay any attention to because I look at the real picture of politics, the hidden hand. That's what interests me. And so, when I was a child, I don't know if I said this. Did I say that I was interested in UFOs and?
We talked about that a little bit earlier before we began recording, but you can let us in on that if you want.
Yeah, so, this led me to looking at, I've become rather bored with UFOs because it's too damn hard to get any evidence on it and perhaps life-threatening if there is any real evidence. And anyway, I'm obsessed with this book and working. And so point is, no intention in the corporate, no interest in the corporate media, no time for it. I found that UFOs, it's a very hard, very hidden, hard subject to get at. I've heard enough hearsay about that. I'm rather bored with it. But this story about government corruption, it just keeps growing, and it's like a soap opera,
Yeah, it is.
And so I like to keep up on that. I find one of the best sources of information is the precious metal experts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they talk about commodities and politics of commodities and money. And that gives you a real window into what's actually going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
But because these people are like scientific money men, you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And anyway, so Kevin Rudd's wife, Kevin Rudd's a smart fella, and his wife, I think, point is, I haven't had time to look at it, but I'm guessing from hearsay, she's made multi-millions of dollars out of government contracts.
Yep.
Now, if I was a betting man, I would bet my right arm that she obtained those contracts through insider trading courtesy of her husband.
Yeah, of course.
So this is what the smart ones are doing. Now, they, of course, form alliances with big companies, and the bigger the better. And I think what's happening is, if I had the time, I'd like to write a book about who donated what to which political party and what laws were changed that suited that donor.
Mm.
Yeah. And so the smart politicians, I believe, form alliances with big business, and in return, the big business pays for their election campaigns. They give them cushy retirement jobs. They give them insider trading tips. And so maybe even brown paper bags in Swiss bank accounts if they're doing all that.
Yeah.
The point is you end up in that situation with increasingly monopolistic international corporations that ultimately, I think, if they're left to their own devices for another, 20 or 50 or 100 years, you're going to see a situation worse than Nazi Germany, like worldwide.
Yeah, and the relationship here that they've entered into is the nature of such that all of this is enforced as well on their own as an individual company. Sure, there is a lot of power that you could amass by that, but ultimately what people need to keep in mind as well that it's with the access to a government that enables them to enforce whatever new rules and bullshit laws that they put in place with their police and ultimately the military force. And that's where it becomes really dangerous. So
yeah.
It's through this relationship, just as you say, that the really bad things happen. And I think if they were standing on their own, if this enforcement structure of violence with military and police wasn't in place, it wouldn't be so ferocious as it is today. But that's what we're seeing, Warren. We're seeing the expansion of where government in this case is being used to be an extension to this international beast that we see of a few people, basically. And that's where it gets really dangerous, you know?
Yeah, well, Mussolini defined fascism as the merger of state and corporate powers.
Yeah.
So for example, American government bailed out the banks for their bad housing loans, the American government increased their debt to those same banks to bail out those banks, which is totally illogical. But however, at the same time, the banks increased the government's debt to them, thereby increasing their control over the government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Right. And so this basically will devolve eventually, I believe, if the public doesn't reverse it, into competing crime gangs, where ultimately the most ruthless will rise to the top. And then in this situation, you attract the worst of the worst to the organizations in government that operate in secret.
But there is one thing that would solve this, and that's, one, people speak up against this, and two, they actually make choices that where they take themselves outside of the sphere of the influence of whatever they do not agree with ideologically or politically or what have you. And if this is purchasing from a company, you know, that they don't support, then, you know, or don't want to support, then don't do it. You see what I mean? It's a relationship between the slave and the slave master, where people's, you know, they complain on it, but they then willingly kind of just go along with what's being there for them. There has to be a stage where people say no to it and walk the other way and you know, set up their own infrastructure for how they want to see things being run, basically. And that's what has to be done. Otherwise, as you say, it will go down this really, really dark road, and people will be in a complete position of dependency at that stage, and then there won't be an ability to set something else up, you know. But there still is today. That's where I'm seeing the hope, Warren.
Yeah. The criticisms, government and big business do deserve a lot of criticism. But I ultimately think that the largest criticism lies with the masses.
Yeah.
Because there's a few of us that have an interest to make the world a better place for our children, and we are aware that governments are becoming increasingly worse, and the rest seem to be rather like an ostrich. Like, it's said that if an ostrich keeps its head in the sand, it thinks that if it can't see you, you can't see it.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
That's the game. That's the game they're playing. And I think that, for example, if at the next election in my country, which is coming soon, national election. Imagine if everybody simply went to the ballot box and put in a blank form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, that would be a revolution without firing a shot.
Yeah.
Because the next, obviously, the politicians have been formally sacked, and then we have to form a new system of government.
Yeah, if you any. Know?
yeah, exactly. And I would say, personally, I believe that you don't want a national government, because that leads to a national army, and a national army leads to an international war. So who needs one of those?
Right.
That's my belief. Mm-hmm. And belief number two, you don't need a state government. You need because that will lead to interstate wars, right?
Yep.
And I think ideally, if I could wave my magic wand again, I would have local governments. And they would be defined as a system of community built up around a port. Now, whether it be a seaport or a rail port or a trucking port or an airport, the point is the incoming freight gets taxed, and only once and at a set rate, and there are no other taxes. And then you have government by the local people, for the local people, and obviously, eventually you'll end up with these mad tyrants who want to kill everybody, but at least you can only have a local war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, it's a point in it. Again, it goes back to if you have a world governmental structure and a system, which so many, you know, political philosophers argue that, you know, it's the only way to go these days. They have this naive approach that it will be, not that it is that in this stage, but they still believe that it's in fairly good hands at this stage. But the fact is that if that structure is in place, you can have anyone basically coming in there and taking over. I mean, Star Wars showed it pretty well, you know, when they're all applauding their tyrannical fascist leader into position, you know, to take over the fleet or whatever it's called in Star Wars. So it's a good analogy. It's a good example. And you should say, therefore, the smaller the influence, the sphere of influence that these, you know, structures have, the less of a danger it will be, and the more likely it is that the people in that region, in that area, can take care of the problem. I mean, that's why countries like Switzerland, they have a, you know, all the men have a machine gun in their house. They're given one by the state as a means of defending both for, you know, foreign and domestic enemies, you know. So there has to be a modality where the men stand up and say no when they've had enough, right? And do what needs to be done to preserve and keep those people out that are not unfit to take over and rule, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it, absolutely. But I think one of the most amusing things is that apparently in America the number one murder weapon is the humble hammer.
Well, exactly. You know.
Yeah. You know. So I joke that if I ever murder somebody, I'll use a rock or a stick, because then the government's going to have a hell of a time trying to ban those.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Well, Warren, I think we should begin to round things up here for this time. And there's a few more things I want to ask you here, obviously about the case and everything. But before we do that, let's make sure just that we give out all the information, of course, where people can go to read more about your story, your case, if you will, and you have a video on the website, you have contact details there, you have a book available. Just, you know, give us the information on where people can go to find it.
Okay, well, if you type in Dark Side of Finland, one word, lowercase, it will be the first link. And there you can read my book for free, and you can watch my video.
Very good. And you do have people can buy the book as well, correct? To support you, to help you out financially in your case, is that correct?
Yeah, they can. I've got a box of books here and that I've had printed, and I'd be happy to mail them to people.
Yeah, and there's information about that on the website, obviously, under the book section, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, very good. Well, I mean, first of all, Warren, I'm just so sorry for everything that you've experienced and gone through in the last, 12, 13, almost 13 years, right? Or even a little bit more, 14, 15 years.
Oh, no, end of 2001. Well, it started in
99, really, right?
Yeah. But, you know, I don't have any ill will towards Kaisu. If I could wave my magic wand, I would, my children, you know, bring my children back to Australia, and, you know, I would make sure that no harm came to her, you know, if I could. But I would certainly wouldn't allow her to, to harm any more children.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you want to mention, that is pertinent to the case that we've been talking about, or something that you'd seek help with, or anything else, basically, before we round things up for this time, Warren? The floor is yours if you so want to.
Well, I'm sure I'll think of something else to say, Henrik, but nothing off the top of my head. It's been great to have this opportunity. Thank you very much. And I think I'm sure there's 1,000 things I haven't said, but they are in the book, you know, and only a fraction of them are in the book, actually. I could literally write an encyclopedia about these people.
Yeah.
You know, take them name by name, you know, and, Yeah, if I could, I mean, if I could get all the documents, they'd probably stand, I don't know, 6 feet tall, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, but my website is darksideoffinland.wordpress.com.
We'll send people there in the meantime, Warren. And of course, I want to thank you as well for your time today. We really, well, appreciate it is of course one word you could use, but it's such a horrendous story, but it's so important that we get to talk about it and discuss it. And these various examples that do occur in different parts of the world, in some cases where we don't expect it, of course, but you're one of those cases where you've kind of, in my view, you've kind of fallen a little bit in between the cracks, if you will, because of this international thing on top of it. And then, of course, the scenario in Finland with psychiatry and the medication and everything else, which is just horrendous. But you've done an excellent job in laying it out for us and detailing and telling us the timeline of the story. And, you know, all I want to say to you, Warren, is to keep up the good spirit, of course, keep fighting and don't give up either. Okay.
No, Henrik, this is, they wanted a fight. They got one, you know, because I do like to fight, you know, I like to fight, make the world a better place. You know, and they've just made it personal for me. I've always been trying to do what I can to make the world a better place, but they've just made it personal, and they've forced me to make to devote my all my spare time to it. You know.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, well, very good. Thank you so much again, Warren, for joining us. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Henrik, and you too. Thank you very much.
That concludes Red Ice Radio for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And these are important stories and examples of how people are treated in a machine-like colony that has no obligation to justify their actions or decisions to anybody but themselves, where people go on automatic and think that what they do is justified because they are on the side of authority. Well, this is the danger with these bureaucratic governments, and worse is if you get enough wrong people in one place, and the damage they can do with the blessing of the state can be monumental. We'll be back in a few days with Nathan Fraser. Tune in again at redicecreations.com and redicemembers.com as we continue our inquiries. Thank you, and take care.